Get started?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No, we are often confused.
Okay, is that running?
She and I are often.
Yes.
Well, yes.
Okay. Okay, we have our recorder going, so.
Yeah, we're always confused.
I'll join that club.
Okay, that's going to sound weird on the recording, but I'm.
Oh, she's recording already?
So this is the Main Gate District Design Review Committee for October 18th, 2012. And this is a study session, and we're going to start with roll call, and I'll just call your name out, you know what to do. Jim Chaffee.
Here.
Matt Williams.
Here.
Jane McCollum.
Here.
Bob Smith.
Here.
Jan Cervelli.
Down the line.
Here.
Richard Fay Tom.
Here.
Yep.
And Tom Warren. Absent.
Yes.
Okay, so we have. We have a quorum. I would like to make a few opening remarks, and then we can have the applicant give their presentation. First, I wanted to clarify some legal issues that we got caused a little bit of an issue earlier on. I spoke to the city attorney's office about the committee and meeting with applicants. The first advice they had given was, no, you shouldn't be meeting with applicants. Since then, they've changed their advice and their opinion on that, and they say, yes, you can meet with applicants. You can meet with applicants outside when we're in outside of Area 1 and when you're dealing with applicants inside Area 1. So that's clear. But the other part is that we are subject to open meeting law. And in open meeting law, we will post online when the meetings occur at least 24 hours ahead of time. That's the state statute rule. But what that does mean is you should not be communicating with each other in the case of where there's going to be a vote. And that applies to Area 1. And this applies to all people who make votes that come out of public meetings, is they're not to concoct the vote outside of the meeting. And so the appearance of concocting a vote, like if you're talking to each other in an email, that could be interpreted that way. So you have to be very careful about talking to each other. Not outside the meeting, you're not allowed to do that. But you can talk to the applicant. We have a call to the audience part, and we'll put this on November 14th. That occurs afterwards. Just the general rule on call to the audience is they speak, but you don't.
Right.
They can't engage you in a Q&A or ask you to give a rationale for something or ask me to give a rationale for something. Basically, that's their opportunity to say their piece, period. And then you listen and absorb it however you're going to. So this meeting today is a study session. So it's a public meeting, yes?
I just have a question about the rules. Does that mean if we're meeting with an applicant, for example, that there can't be a quorum of the committee unless it's posted? Or do we have to post the meeting that we're having outside? I'm just trying to verify.
If I were in your shoes, I would just meet singly. I know that's inconvenient for some of you.
No, but singly is like Tom and I, which is not a quorum of this committee, correct?
That's correct.
Because we would technically meet with them on behalf
of... Let me check on that.
Okay.
My conservative advice would be meet individually with
like
the applicant.
Like me?
Right.
And Tom separately?
Tom separately.
Bob and I
separate. Right.
Okay.
Let me find out if that, because I think that's how it's supposed to be, that you can't really start getting people together.
Okay.
But I'll check on that one.
Is that with a 24-hour notice or not? That's.
No. When you're meeting with an applicant, you can meet anytime with an applicant.
Okay.
It's just you can't be discussing it among yourselves.
You have to report back what the talk was about.
No. It's up to you however you want to use it. You could say, that was nice, ignore it and move on. However you want to handle, that's up to you. The main thing I'm trying to say is you can't concoct a vote outside of the public meeting.
So we come back here for the discussion, and we come back here for the vote.
Right.
Okay.
The design professional today is Richard Fay Tom. What we found out, as you know, the two people who couldn't be here when we polled you was Tom Warren and Rick Gonzalez. So we were thinking, oh, okay, that's okay. The first advice I received, that's fine. You know, there's nothing special about it. Then we checked the ordinance and we realized to have a quorum, you have to have the design professional. So that's why Richard came to this meeting, so that we can have a quorum. Otherwise, we can't, even if all of you were here and the design professional is not here, we can't go on because that's not considered a quorum. So it's just a peculiarity.
We got Bob and
yeah, just a peculiarity of how the ordinance is written, and we just have to live with that. One of the things we're hoping to have for you in the future is a rules of procedure. You know, this is moving very fast. You know, we've just started on August 7th and this year, but eventually we'll catch up and work with the city attorney in creating a rules of procedure as to how, and then you can all have this, and I won't have to explain this every meeting. So where we're going with this is we're going to have a study session. No vote is required. You can have Q&A among yourselves and with the applicant. Then on November 4th, there will be a final vote. And between that, if you want to meet with the applicant between that, what I'm saying and what the advice I received is you can. It's just you can't meet among yourselves. Okay? There is a portion that applies specifically to this lot in the main gate ordinance that you're most of you, I think, are aware of, and it has to do with a bulk reduction plan. And there are rules specifically on sides of buildings that you have to apply to buildings in the main gate. On this particular lot, we created a bulk reduction plan because they were getting hit on three sides. And we felt as we were doing this, and this was part of our stakeholder agreement that we took on and got adopted, was they could do the majority of their bulk reduction on the west side that faced the historic bungalows and reduce their bulk reduction on the side on Tyndall and First. So that's a key component that I assume that they are going to be presenting to you in this study session. So with that, unless you have any questions, we'll proceed and let them make their presentation.
I actually didn't bring my overlay document. Do you happen to have one?
You know, I really tried to make one in every single copier upstairs is broken. So I apologize for that.
I had
the best of intentions tonight to have one for all of you, and then I just like, what are you going to do? You know, just start tearing up mine. You know? So I don't have it, but I will have them for every meeting from now on. But if you want to use...
I have a copy, not one for everyone.
Yeah, why don't we just give it to you? We can give it to you.
I might have to come. If you guys have any questions for me, I'll have to come back and get it. But
can you send a digital copy to us so we can...
It's online. And I'll send you an online link.
Is this wireless down here?
I'm sorry?
Are we wireless down here?
I tried to go online, and I couldn't go online.
No, it's very sketchy. Yeah.
I think because we're so low.
Actually,
there's
cell phone reception, but no wireless.
Oh, there you go. Okay, with that, we can turn it over to the applicant and they can start their presentation.
Thank you, Jim. And I also have a copy of it. It just has my notes all over it. So I'm happy to help out if there's just language if somebody needs to see it. You just don't really want to read my notes. They're not snarky, there's just notes. Since I know we're recording, I assume you want me to go ahead and give name, Carrie Sylvan,
sure.
With Lazarus Sylvan and Bangs, representing Core Campus. And these guys are all going to end up talking at some point. So we have Jeff Zalisco, who is the architect on the project, and Eric Grimm and Eric and Mark Lifshin, who are both with Core Campus. So first of all, thank you all. I know that scheduling these meetings is somewhat of a nightmare with all of your schedules, and we appreciate you guys making the time to have this level of an informal meeting with us. We're actually really excited about what we're going to show you. We're hoping you're as excited when we're done. What I want to do really quickly is I'm just going to go through and remind you of kind of where we've been, what we presented to staff, what we talked to you all about originally, and then kind of the recommendations that we heard collectively from you all in an informal setting. And then these guys are going to talk about the work they've been doing for the last 3 weeks to kind of address each of those recommendations. So the format is to really take each of the issues, concerns, recommendations, and then show you what it is that we've done, as opposed to walking through the ordinance and telling you how we think we meet the ordinance. We figured this is the response to some of the concerns that we heard, and then we'll see how that goes, get feedback, ask questions while we're doing this, and then we'll hopefully address whatever needs to be addressed and do the full code compliant presentation if that's what you all desire on the 14th. So that's the plan. Go ahead. Oh, I already did this one. I did that one too. So the just as a reminder, this was the original plan that we sat down with staff on, and you'll see what they had planned to do was the west elevation is what would be on a normal map. Thank you. I was enjoying doing this. I'm just kidding. And we had designed the building with the majority of the bulk reduction being along Tyndall, and we heard, or on First, I'm sorry, we heard loud and clear that the way you read this ordinance, we need to focus the bulk reduction on the west. So this was a plan before any of you all saw it. Go ahead. And then what we did before we even came and talked with you all was we moved it so that at least that what meets the technical code, which is the 12 feet over 25%, was on the west side. But we also heard loud and clear that that was not the intent of the ordinance, and what the words actually meant was a very serious step back on the west side, and as Jim Mazzocca suggested, with some ability to reduce those requirements on First and Tyndall. So here I'm going to just summarize really quickly kind of what we heard and what we've responded to, and they're going to give you the response. So I already talked about focusing really on the west side of the building as being the primary bulk reduction and what the context of bulk reduction actually means, which is that step back of the building so it doesn't have that 90-foot or 130-foot wall, and an acknowledgement that it steps back for those the buildings on the west. When we initially did the plan, the pool location was at the 120 feet, but it was in the northwest corner of the building. And the sense was, is that's exactly where it should not be. And can you please consider moving it elsewhere? And we'll talk to you about what we've done. There was some acknowledgement that because it was on the 12th floor, some of the noise issues were probably not going to be as predominant as they would if it was down lower, but also making sure that we do some level of wall and things to make sure the noise keeps going up from wherever it is we end up putting the pool.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, did you hear pretty much the same things?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Cool.
And that's part
of... It's good for me to know, because I just didn't... I would assume that, but I shouldn't assume.
That's part of why I wanted to go through this, was so that everybody was on the same page as to what we heard, and yes, it was very similar. Some were stronger on some things, and others stronger on others, but it was the same stuff.
Thank you.
The streetscape and pedestrian enhancement, particularly the corner of Tyndall and First, so the importance of the streetscape, the importance of creating an interactive sidewalk and a particularly activating Tyndall in that area. And then the corner of First and Tyndall, really making sure that it has a sense of place and an interaction with the building and is just pedestrian friendly and good, well designed, with all of the plantings, which is the next thing, that are appropriate, the furniture, amenities, that kind of stuff. We did have some discussions with a few of you on the location of retail and parking entrance, and we had initially put the parking entrance on Tyndall with most of the retail along First, and the sense was is that it made more sense to flip that because Tyndall is going to be the street that we're trying to activate sort of at the university with its feeding into the hotel and the other projects that are going in right there, and that First may be a more appropriate spot to design the parking entrance. You asked, and you will get, the management plan, how we manage the students in the project, but also the design elements that are important to that management. And you'll hear a little bit about that coordination as well. The parking, there were there was at least one of you who was...
And we all can guess who.
I wasn't going to call you out.
But we know.
Concerns about parking and really making sure that as we go through this process and provide the parking, that we're also taking a look at the context at the university and what our experience is with the hopeful opportunity that the streetcar brings, and make sure that we're doing everything we can to accommodate parking on the site. And then we were also asked to create some contextual plans, mainly kind of backing away a little bit from our specific site, taking a look at the area and putting on there the heights that the overlay ordinance could permit, not that it's going to, but could permit in the area, so that we can take a look at the potential context with that overlay district. So we've gone ahead and done that as well. So I am now going to turn it over to these guys to
here,
tell you
what
go we
back
got.
To the other slide. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're going to take these things. By the way, thank you very much again, as Carrie has said. Thank you for being with us here again today. I'm very appreciative for you making the time for us. We're going to really take these items and go through item by item, you know, down this list of items. And I'm going to cover some of them, and Mark will cover some of the others. So go ahead. This is the end of the building facing towards the west that you saw a few weeks ago. We had sheer walls up towards the end. Obviously, we made an effort to be able to deal with the low element with landscaping and what was above. But it was a sheer wall, and I think this is where there was we got a lot of positive feedback about how we ought to deal with this. So we started looking at different setbacks and strategies, and we tried to do this within the modules of the building and how, you know, the building is designed for student residences. So
could you just call out the streets and just so everybody's on the
sure.
same page?
This is First Street, okay. And then around the corners, Tyndall, and then this is the alley okay. along the west side of the building. There. So we looked at starting to step back, you know, provide step backs along the building, and we wanted to start low and then just continue back. And these offsets allow terraces. Would be largely landscaped, heavily landscaped terraces. But so we started to, you know, look at how this all worked and how it worked within the building. We started to step back a little further. These step backs are generally 10 feet. As you go back, and then we looked at some that could go even further. This was step back 20, and then 20 along the side here. So we kept looking at just different ways of approaching that. This is what's the proposed 12th floor, and you can see as we started to move along, we started to look at these step backs kind of going up and over. So there's a substantial setbacks that take place in a way we felt that was kind of strategic with relationship to the street along First Street and then along the alley, especially along the north end. So if you can go to the next slide. Then we look back and we step back even further from these other elements. So we continue back. We went back further up here, went back even further along here. And then we felt that this is very important, that these are heavily landscaped. It creates, we feel, a really great look around the building, this kind of climbing up along the side. And I think, you know, the difference between where we were with the sheer wall to where these step backs fall, we think is significant. The other part of it is we set back along the corners first always. So at this point here, we're 43 feet above grade and the same at that side. So we're really, you know, quite low in relationship to the other buildings, the neighboring buildings to the side. We feel like it's a reasonable, you know, moving up and stepping up. The other important part of it was that we were very heavily going to landscape along the end of our terrace area there, and then also along the perimeter of the pool. So the pool has now been, we'll see a little bit more of that, but where the pool was previously over this end, actually over here, we've now taken it and moved it over here and then moved it back. Also, it's our intent to provide a green screen, which would have a dripper system along the bottom so it actually grows. And, you know, let that start to grow along that side of the building if you have a great opportunity to do that. So, the next item that was on our bullet point list was having to do with the pool. Obviously, we were at this corner. There's a lot of sensitivity over at that location towards the pool, we heard. So, we looked at Along with that, I think I mentioned while we were talking in one of the meetings about how it may be difficult to get this over here without redoing everything. And so, go to the next slide. We redid the whole core. We really redesigned the building. We took the elevator core that was over at this location, moved it over to this location. We also added an elevator because that's an important part of the building, being able to move up and down quickly. So we took that core. This also has to do with what you'll see a little bit later, with what we're dealing with the retail and the entrances. But we moved this core over here so we could move the pool back to this location also. And, you know, it's moved about 130 feet. You know, so now it's lying really centered along First Street. We think that's a great location. It's 120 feet up in the air. There's also an exit corridor along the back that provides an additional buffer, you know, kind of directing, if there's going to be sound, it's going to direct a little bit more towards, continue to direct along the sound. So we think that we could not probably done more with the pool relative to sound, relative to keeping away from an area where the sound could, you know, move to the west. We feel like we've really, you know, made some dramatic adjustments along with our stepping of the building to address what was a very important issue for many people. So next item we wanted to talk about was the streetscape and pedestrian enhancement along, again, First and Tyndall. And we heard from many of you and really from a lot of people that really First Tyndall's building would be a much stronger retail street and that retail would die here. We don't want retail to die if we're going to put it in. So along with when we moved this core, we were able to really extend it along this entire area. While doing that, we also have widened the sidewalk to 16 feet along Tyndall. The right-of-way is still 32 feet, allowing 12 feet for each drive lane, and then 8 feet for a parking lane, which exists presently on the east side of the street. So we've widened that sidewalk. We've also provided a drop-off, which could be for taxis, for, you know, anyone doing it, you know, coming along that street, engage with the building, whether they're being dropped off for retail or for whatever. But this allows traffic to move while that person is pulled over instead of having people having to stop behind it. We felt that that was very important. One thing we're heard is, you know, the students are, they're going out at night and there's a lot of them calling cabs and there needs to be a place for them to, you know, be able to stop along the street. So we felt that that was a great location for that. While we moved the retail over along Tyndall, we also moved the residential entrance on First Street. And part of the reason we did that along with, you know, the retail being in a better position now was that that allowed us to have that retail or the residential element where there's a lot of activity where there's a 20-foot sidewalk available to us. So we felt that that was very important, that those, you know, there could be a lot of activity, there's plenty of room. A 20-foot sidewalk is an absolutely great sidewalk width. It's on the outside of perfect, it's on the bigger side of perfect, but we think it's right because of the activity that will take place here. As we went with that, you know, as we're looking at how that all worked, we started to say, well, how's this streetscape experience work? And we really wanted to create almost like an outdoor room. We have a trellis element that wraps around the entire, really around the entire building around the corner onto Tyndall from First. And our rendering doesn't reflect this, but our intent is to have, you know, a real subtle lighting that creates this wonderful kind of experience as you're moving across. They're subtle, very much part of the space, not bright, but it's continuous and it's part of moving along there in the evening. You can see we have these wonderful benches that we're proposing in front of our planter beds, which would be lit up from underneath and glow. So there's this kind of this texture of lighting that's part of, you know, the entire experience of moving around the building. The other element that you're going to see, that you see, and I'll in a moment ask you to go back to that last slide, is that these planter beds are very large. They're 25 feet, two of them are 25 feet along First Street. They're 5 feet wide. We have indigenous wonderful plants, you know, within those, but they really help create this room and this sidewalk. They frame the edge of the sidewalk, and along with the trellis at the top, we feel like there's a real space that's created there that makes it a real intimate feeling occur along the retail and along the sidewalk at the residential entrance. Can you go back to the other item I wanted to point out was that we kind of chamfered this corner so that there's a really generous area along the corner for visibility, just for movement. We think that along in here we have enough width to actually be able to get you know, chairs and tables. You know, let's say there's a restaurant at this location, we'll be able to have the width that's required by the city, which is a minimum of a 6-foot path, while still having tables. But we can most certainly get it in this covered area within the building. So the chamfer really gives us a lot of things. It opens up this corner for movement and also for visibility along that corner. But all this is underneath this wonderful trellis that will continue along these elements. plant materials, after working carefully with Yvette and Sing, we feel that the Palo Verde is really the most wonderful street tree for the settlement. We would branch, have these be single stump trees. I know this one's not showing yet, but it would be more of a single stump, so it's up higher. The canopy is up a little bit higher. And then, you know, we're looking at other wonderful indigenous plant materials to use in our planter beds. They could be mixed. I mean, we're still thinking about exactly how we would do that, but we would be using these materials that have, plant materials that have wonderful color in some cases, you know, but there's a variation in that also. As we, Carrie mentioned, we had relocated the parking entrance, and we felt that it was really a win-win in a lot of ways, because the parking entrance, as we had it located before, took up 60 feet, and it really killed the potential for the retail along here. But we also feel along on First Street, because the student population it's 100 cars. There's not that much movement during regular peak periods, so we felt that it was better to get it away from the entrances that are going to be occurring at this project, and also, you know, the entrance here. So we moved it away from that location. We felt that that was really a better location for that. It also ties in with the same curb cut for the loading. And I guess while we're talking about this, you know, this, when we had a staff meeting, this was really where all these things wanted to be and where the staff wanted to see it. So those things we feel really all tied in a very well, in a very good way. I think with that, I'm going to pass on to Mark.
Yeah, come on up. I don't think we've met, but I'm Mark with Core Campus. I know Carrie and Jeff both said the same thing, but I want to thank you for the time. I serve on a board in Chicago as well, so I understand that it's definitely a time commitment, and I appreciate that. Core Campus, Carrie told me not to bore you with our bio, since most of you knew a little bit of background about us. We do have a bio here that we can pass out afterwards if anyone wants to take a look, but I did want to give a little bit of background in terms of Core Campus, because it seamlessly goes together and ties into management and design and how we see the build our company working together. We're a multifamily mixed-use company who's really solely focused on student housing. That's always been our niche. We have development, management, and financing in-house. Over the course of the years, we've kind of taken some bumps in the road and learned that without one of them, there's a huge gap in the program. Without financing, we're kind of all just wasting our time right here. Without development, the management can fail. Without management, which in our opinion, especially for student housing, it's the most important aspect to have in-house. Third-party management, you're just not as proactive, and you can't adapt to change enough. So having those in-house just gives us a really seamless company from one aspect to the next as you go through and down the company. Over 12 years, we've done about 7,500 beds. We are definitely long-term holders. We're not build and sell type of company. That's not our motto. We're looking to build a portfolio, grow it, which is why we focus so much on management. That's really the backbone of our company, which is management. You know, and I think that's what really differentiates us from the rest, and we'll get into that as we go down here. Our approach with management is this decentralized approach. We might not be headquartered in Arizona, but our management is. Each one of our projects, we're headquartered at that project itself. I think you saw on the first floor plan that there was a management office, a leasing office, just adjacent to the lobby. We kind of create that all as one space. And it's really important to have that presence on site. In that office, we staff it with a GM, minimum of 10 years experience. We have assistant managers. We have leasing consultants. We have full-time maintenance technicians. And most importantly, what we think really separates us is the resident managers. Resident managers, what we do is, we came up with this maybe about 3-4 years ago. And we, you know, during the application process where in the first year people are, tenants are just applying for housing, we pick out different tenants from different cliques within the building. And we program into our budget about 5,000 hours for these residents to work for us. And that just allows us a greater sense of control than the building itself. It's much like what you saw when you went to school and you were a freshman living in the dorm, just to a totally different aspect and spin on it. It really, we've seen just a massive success with this approach.
From a design perspective, it's I keep using the word seamless because that's the one that fits the best with management and development for us. We're really tied at the hip. In order, I run the development side of the business. I think some of you met my partner, Brian Neuswander, who runs the management side. I'll never let Brian hear this, but management is far more important than development because I can put up a really nice product, but if we don't have management, it does nothing for us. We've designed this building to have 41% of the units, 1 to 3-bedroom units. That shows that we're really targeting this graduate and upperclassmen mix. The rest of the units are 4 and 5-bedroom units, and we really consider those pod-like. Each bedroom is its own little pod, and they're individually locked. We see all our leasing is by the bed. So what we see is a lot of kids that cannot afford a 1-bedroom, but they want to be by themselves. They go to a lesser price model like a 4 or 5-bedroom, and we start placing people together. About 60% of our leasing is typically done like this by the bed. The other 40% comes in groups. We have a phrase in-house that's designed with the student in mind, the serious student. When we always take a step back, the only amenities that really differentiate from campus to campus is one that entails the culture and the environment. The rest of it, you know, Wi-Fi, business centers, conference rooms, retail, fitness, that's all the same. That's within our program itself. We really take it seriously, and that's why we focus so much on management. From a retail perspective, we don't look at retail like your typical retail on the bottom. We don't want to put in a National Jimmy John's or Subway or any of the fast casuals. We want to bring in, we found a lot more success to bring in a local food and beverage company to really service the building above. We treat it more like a hotel feel, where it can somewhat be like a concierge service for the tenant above. Balconies, I know Jeff, kind of referenced the balconies. When you take the stepped approach, it obviously forces the balconies within the design itself, and that's something that we have to take really serious from a management perspective. So what we do, and we've done this in other projects, we build a huge landscape buffer. This is a concrete building, so we build a parapet wall, which just comes up from the slab, and we step it from the edge of the building where the balcony starts all the way in to a portion where we want the balcony really to start. We'd like to minimize our balconies. That's the landscape buffer that you'll hear us referring to a lot. So we create a pretty large landscape buffer within our buildings themselves. We only put balconies in the larger units. The rest of the units just have operable windows. Security, we're big on these phrases. And security, we have a phrase that we call student safety and parent comfort. You're really, in today's student housing world, marketing to the parents just as much as the students. And it's, you know, with any new building going up, security can play such a big factor with life safety and whatnot. We accomplish this with key fobs on every common doorway. We know where every tenant is at every time with the key fob approach. It allows us to just monitor the building really well. Cameras, garage part access, garage doors. It takes a lot of weight off our management staff. The proactive approach, it really starts, and this probably should have been up at the beginning, because our lease and rules is what defines how that experience is going to be. It's a very serious lease. It's within the management plan that you can all take. We give a sample lease. And everything starts up front. We're proactive in that approach where if a bottle were to fall off a balcony, you can lock the balcony or terminate the lease. So, again, it's just another proponent of our management staff. Lobby design and egress approach. This is something that that shows another transition between the development to the management team. We design our lobbies where they're adjacent to the leasing center and the management office, and we really create one space. The egress is another important aspect because you can have students propping open exit doors, and it just creates a really bad system, and it's really tough to manage. So you'll see if we go back to the first floor plan. Eric, do you mind going back to the first floor plan? You'll see here that the main exit is right here, and it's our leasing center can easily control that. The other corridor, Jeff and I discussed the other day, just didn't make it in here, which is the exit right here. This only goes to floor 2, but we will bring this all the way back so it exits adjacent to the leasing center as well. It just allows us a better sense of control. within the building itself. Okay, next slide is parking, drop off, and move in. So from a parking sense, we our name Core Campus focuses on what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to buy main and main sites as close to campus as we can. It's really important to us. We go after the modern student and close to mass transit. Everything with this site is in a sense. We have 100 spots on the site, 93 are needed per code. Right now we're evaluating how many zip cards that we'll be including. We will be including zip cards, just a matter of how many. We're going through that evaluation now. We also have a plan B that we're currently working on. We've been dealing with a local broker to find a nearby site to purchase and build grade parking in case we needed that for our own residents. The worst thing we can do, you know, we're putting up a $50 million project, and the worst thing we can do is underpark it. If we underpark it, the building's not worth what we paid for it. So our plan B is having this off-site parking. We also were talking to a couple garages, our broker is, and we're working that in that sense, but most likely we'll end up buying a secondary lot. You know, in our experience throughout the country, one campus to the next, students don't typically use their car as often, well, they don't use their car as often as your typical residential building. They often leave it there for weeks at a time, months at a time. So it's not as critical to them to be under the parking. They'd rather save the money and have it at an off-site location. So that's why we think if there was a problem, we just mitigated our risk with this plan B. Bike parking will exceed code in terms of the amount of bike parking that we have in the building. We actually are doing a project in Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, where together with the staff we developed all of our entire building itself. We supply all the furniture, all FF&E. We supply from beds, dressers, you name it. The kids, they don't bring anything. We spent a ton of money on getting really cool modern furniture into the environment that they're comfortable with. We do that so the building does not get so beat up year after year after year because turnover in student housing is so great. One of the things that we've never really been able to accomplish is the bikes. The bikes destroy the buildings. So as much as code might say you need X amount of spaces, we're developing a system that adjacent to a closet in each unit is a closet that stores all the bikes. Because right now, 90% of the students don't want to leave their bikes downstairs in a bike room. No matter how many spaces you have, how many bike lockers you have, they want it up in their unit. So this is just it's a design that we're doing in-house to again, just minimize the impact on the building. Drop-off and move-in is big in any community. We obviously have the First and Tyndall, on First Street, or on Tyndall, the pull-in lane where people can, cabs can just pull off and not disrupt traffic. But move-in is probably the more important aspect to discuss. We'll staff in move-in 15 to 20 employees to help all of the tenants move in. And what we do is tenants will typically move in within a 7-day period. We dictate to the students what day and time that they're allowed to move in. And they can use that lane, they can also use the garage. So you just really spread the move-in out throughout an X amount of day period, depending on how many beds you have. Again, since we don't have any, the kids are not bringing their couches, they're not bringing their TVs, we supply all the TVs. So it's a lot less impact to the community because all they're bringing is their computer and their bags and some miscellaneous small items. This is something that my partner Brian reminded me, he's moved in 100,000 students, and this has just been developed over time. This is a document that really just lays out the different projects that we've done in the last couple of years. I don't want you to feel in any way that we're comparing Tucson to the hub on campus at ASU, or Oregon, or in Champaign at the U of I, or Michigan. These are all just projects that we've done to show what we've seen throughout the country in terms of our ratio of parking per bed and per unit. We did both. We know that Tucson really analyzes it per unit. A lot of places do per bed. So it's just nice to be able to compare these when you look at it and see what other universities are doing, even though every university really has a different type of student. You can see that, you know, the hub of Tucson is right there within the mix of all the parking and a per bed ratio and per unit ratio. And this is you, Jeff.
in our meeting that we had with Jan and Bob, she had recommended that maybe we look at an approach at how this building, you know, we're proposing, how it impacts the surrounding areas, you know, the buildings next to it, and then what else is happening. And I think this is a really neat view because it shows, you know, with the lower buildings here, how we really are stepping away from those buildings where along that edge there is a lower element that's more contextual. You see some of the other building heights that are around. Obviously, these buildings are going to be a little bit taller, but I think that this is an interesting perspective of how that works. And then we looked at the massing that's allowed by zoning, and we just put blocks where we didn't really take into account the setbacks, but as you look at what's going on, there is a lot of other mass that's going to potentially be up higher, you know, along this border in here. And I think this also, again, shows, you know, that the way we're kind of moving ourselves away from what's happening towards the west. The one interesting thing I would also mention that you see in here is that, you know, we still do a third of that elevation is completely open. So, you know, when you think about what's happening in the center of this element and then with the wings that have stepped back with these, you know, green elements along it, we think it's striking. And in a way, we're saying that we think it looks a heck of a lot better than it did before because of that. So really, we think it has improved the appearance of the building in particular from the west side. And then that's that same, you know, that same contextual look at the building in relationship to what could be happening on the neighboring sites as far as the massing of the taking place. Just wanted to go through an overview of what we're proposing with the project. There's over 7,000 square feet of retail. As Martha mentioned earlier, we have 100 parking spaces. There's 169 units. We have 596 beds presently. That's a reduction from 620 beds from the scheme that you've seen previously. It's actually, it's interesting because we made the building more efficient. We added essentially a single loaded corridor around First and Tyndall that allowed us to get more beds, because as we were losing beds with our step back, we were trying to look at ways to be more efficient with the way the building laid out, and we were able to mitigate some of the loss that occurred with those step backs by adding those beds that are along those two perimeter elements. The overall building height, the maximum height is 130 feet. It does obviously step down quite a bit less to the west. As I said, it starts at 40 feet, ramps to 50, and then steps back up gradually from there also. The gross area of the building is presently at 297,000 plus square feet. And again, that's down from about 13,000 square feet from where it was previously. As we were looking at the design here, we talked about this before, but really our inspiration was the work of Louis Berrigan and Ricardo Legarreta, amazing, world-renowned Mexican architects. And we felt that the color and the massing was really a wonderful starting place for this project, you know, in Tucson. We felt it was really just amazing. You see it, and I think it just draws you in. The interesting about some of this is, by the way, these are paddocks. This is a barn. Which I just thought was kind of a neat thing, but so that's someone really thinking out of the box. We thought that was really a wonderful inspiration to go to that side. What we were looking at, again, we were refining the colors and the elements of the building, and we kind of fine-tuned the colors to this wonderful orange. We see this as a very strong swirl, kind of stucco material with really rich colors. It's hard to really replicate that in a rendering like this, but that's something we're going to spend a lot of time and effort to get just right. Also, you're seeing along some of the other elements of the building, we're proposing a color more of a grayish-white color. We felt that was much more contextual with the landmark buildings that are to the west. We felt that's, you know, you're riding up in a color palette that's, you know, much softer and simpler, not sort of simpler, but really ties in better to those buildings. So we felt that was an important element. Another element I wanted to point out, we really wanted to make an iconic corner here, you know, as you're coming down First Street. This glassy element that's framed by the balconies, we felt that that's really a signature, powerful element that you see from these elements of the building. We use the balconies also as elements to help break up the facade of the building. We, on both facades, from a percentage standpoint, we're at 25% or more, way more actually along this side because of the step backs. We are not, as we were talking about some of the relief because of what's happening to the west, we're not stepping back to 12 feet. Those balconies outset about 2 feet, and they recess approximately 3 feet. But we still feel that those recesses really provide relief in the way the facade is read in the building, the way it will actually be seen, you know, from the distance and really from underneath the building. The other element you see that we're really making a big part of the building is this trellis that really, and that's going to be a very generous trellis that really has a big impact on the sidewalk, you know, the shadows that are created, which is obviously so important here. But also the kind of tapestry of light that it'll, you know, cut across the sidewalk. We intend that that would have sort of a very similar element of character to it of the glass that we have, which has kind of a stepped and somewhat random character to it. So we want to carry, we like to see elements carry throughout the building. And then you're seeing, you know, what we're proposing along the west and the softer color palette that we feel ties in with these buildings. Better than what we were proposing earlier. We like the idea that the masses, these masses are broken with color. It really kind of defines these things, but we feel that it was better to also soften up that color palette as it came around to the west.
Can you go back to for a quick second? The other thing I want to add was, as we were meeting today and kind of going through all of this, we started talking about the outdoor potential for outdoor patio areas, and then we started sort of questioning, because most of that sidewalk is in the right of way. So we called Jose Ortiz over at City Transportation to ask about the permissibility of putting outdoor seating in the area that's part of the right of way. And we had a good discussion with him, and because we've expanded these sidewalks to be those that large, it's not going to be a problem. He needs to make sure, for safety reasons, that there's complete 6 feet of clearance on the sidewalk, and we can easily accommodate the planters and some outdoor seating as well to help with the retail and restaurant uses. So that corner right there on the ground level, we have to keep the vegetation away for some of it for the site visibility triangles on the roadways. But we're going to be able to hopefully find a restaurant tenant or somebody that will use that area and really create an inviting, cool atmosphere for people to engage with the building, with the trellis coming out, and then with whatever's in that space. So the PowerPoint we're handing out, right?
Yeah.
And so at the end of the PowerPoint, we're not going to go through it. There's some more information about experience and capabilities and some of the other projects that Core Campus has done, just so you have that information. If you have questions and want Mark to run through it, I'm sure he's happy to. But we thought that it was important to get the issues on the table and kind of what we've done, and then duck. So I guess we're in the ducking stage.
Jeff, do you have a east elevation?
We haven't rendered the east elevation, or we don't have renderings along this line. We have modeled it. That elevation actually may be the easiest.
The one from the corner, you can kind of see it. Is that what you mean?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, we do have a rendering in there. If you go back to the first section. Yeah. Right. So there are balconies along that. This facade, the facade along here is set back from the face of the building 10 feet.
That's the north elevation.
That's the north. East is
a lot. Oh, sorry. That's right. The east was. Let's go to the corner.
The north is interesting.
Right.
We were looking at.
The one that I was talking about.
This is the east facade. That's the east facade along Tyndall.
The facade that's not really shown very much is the north facade.
But the north facade will have, the character of that facade will be very similar to actually the south facade.
And on the corner there, are those individual units? That's all glass.
This unit, it's a unit that continues over here. It continues around.
Those are your larger units, correct?
That's a four-bedroom unit in the corner.
Which were actually on the west side originally, and I thought that was bad.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Because those are five-bedroom units.
Yeah, they'll be spoiled with that glass. A lot of glass.
It does
It'd be nice to have those on the
board. Yeah, there's an element here that doesn't read very well. There's a canopy element that projects out. It's going to project out approximately 3 feet, and we saw that as a shading device also with the glass that exists there. So that was part of dealing with that glassier element. We thought that was appropriate. We like that the shadow, and again, I don't think that this shows it as dramatically as it will, but that's going to provide very strong shadows along that portion of the building, obviously additional shade.
We also, when we construct the building, we provide roller shades for every window, residential and common, so it's just seamless all the way up. Like a lot of condo buildings require you put in the same shade, so you don't have 50 different types and blocks.
No aluminum foil.
No. For anything that'd be too good.
No property.
So is this comment time?
Can I ask one other illustration? One that shows the northeast or the northwest corner more in detail.
Yes.
The west side and.
One of the renderings, and perhaps we should have done
the other corner.
Right,
at that level of detail.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't have it here to show you, but yes, we can create it.
Because that's the critical. I mean, that's the most important corner.
Just so I'm clear, is that your setbacks on this corner, the southwest corner? Did you say those were 10 foot? Those are like every one of those little spots.
These set back 10 feet, and 10 feet, and 10 feet. And then the same thing on this side, 10 feet. So yes, each one of those sets back. Essentially a bedroom module.
And then what about the other?
The other side.
And then the other side, this one sets back 20 feet. And then we have another one over here that sets back 20 feet. This one sets back 20 feet also. And then this one, these ones are 10. So that sets back 20 feet there and there.
Yeah, it's just hard to get
that. They're different, yeah. Each side is a little different.
It's hard from this side to appreciate that other side.
Right. The setbacks on this side are at the same heights. It just, they set back, this one sets back 20 feet where this one sets back 10. And the same thing happens here. This one sets back 20 where that sets back 10. So we push it back further just to bring that portion of the building just a little bit further away along here and create a greater kind of setback.
And on that west face, I'm just trying to recognize some differences as well at the ground level. I see some grading that you guys want to do the green wall element with. What's going on with how that goes up there and then translates into the courtyard area?
Well, the courtyard, that's a thick landscape buffer within the edge of that courtyard. That courtyard's, I think, about 130 feet long. So that's a buffer just really for sound. And with the terraces, the core campus really likes to not allow the students to get very close to that element.
Yeah,
if
I
could
use that. Sure. They don't really accurately, we just flipped the core around 6 days ago, so we've been playing catch-up. But you'll see a lot of these balconies don't accurately show. We actually... It'll be like I described, a concrete parapet that holds a landscape buffer. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm just trying to see. I see sort of how it, if you follow the line from the southwest corner there, and it kind of steps up as it gets close to the courtyard. And I'm just trying to understand what that stepping is in there. It's really hard to tell. What you guys are doing
where,
there.
Right
is that
here?
Just open stuff? At,
right here?
Yeah. Actually go back to your right, a little bit right in that area.
Well, it'll all be, it's just not accurate. So this whole thing will just be a wall of green that is X amount of feet wide.
55 feet wide.
Oh, okay. Deep. I'm talking about the depth.
Yeah. And what is it on the building face there? I mean, that's the depth.
Are those things perforated? Are
talking about this?
That whole area down there. I'm just trying to understand.
Parking
what that
garage.
Is. Well, what it is flat. Is, I mean, what are they doing?
There's going to be actually those grillage areas are going to be. There's electrical transformers and elements like that. So access is required there. So that would be a louvered type element.
So those are metal elements.
These elements here. Yeah.
Right.
What's the other wall next to them on either side?
And then
is that concrete?
There would be green wall. Yeah, that would be a concrete or a stucco finish on a wall system that. Carries on as we have on
with the intent of having green
yes,
greenery growing.
That's correct.
Okay. And then as that green wall, you know, steps to those you know, second level louvered grates, you know, is that?
That's more of an that's an architectural articulation. Okay. It's going to be actually like a tile.
The courtyard inside there is actually just at that same level going all the way back. There's not like some, you know, added stepping or something going on there. It's just really hard to see.
And, you know, maybe we should look at that in the plan.
Look at the floor plan.
Be nice to have a that's section from the alley on up to the school.
I do hope that at the end. So, so Matt, that's, you know, that's that landscape element that we were looking at there, and that's really the edge. We're creating a strong edge of the courtyard so that there's a real strong buffer at that courtyard.
So, what are the balconies? There are none.
This is the lowest residential level. So yes, so that's where those elements are right at.
No, in the.
To the courtyard.
In the courtyard.
We have no balconies in the courtyard. And that's because the sound, you know, it's only 60 feet across.
Well, and it just becomes a management nightmare. There's no way to control that. So we lock off, you know, all common areas get locked off at sundown, essentially. And, you know, if you have balconies, there's no way to control that area.
So I have a few thoughts. Let me just run through them. First, I think you guys have responded a lot to a number of the things that I know we brought up, and I think others did as well. I hope we weren't too rough on you when we talked to you the first time, but as you could tell, we're pretty passionate about making things as good as they can be here and about conforming to some of the principles that we've all, I think, embraced here. And I think that the setbacks that you've made towards the historic facilities are really, really critical, and I appreciate that you did that. I think that there's a chance with the setbacks you have that from the ground level at around where those historics are, when you look up at a lower wall before it sets back, that you would not feel the same kind of looming over. And I actually like the idea of the landscape edges on each of these things, so you actually would perceive some of the landscape that is growing and green and hanging over the edge a little. That could be a positive thing. So you know, I think that your redesign in that area is really good. I think also the one of the important views is from the north west, because this is one of the buildings that will kind of anchor the higher facilities as you look coming down Speedway and anywhere in that area. And I think that the way that you've buffered even more or pulled back even more that northwest corner is both responsive more to that core of historic homes, and also is responsive more to views from a distance coming down Speedway and from anywhere out in that area. I think that's positive. I really like that. I think that moving the pool was important. Appreciate that you did that. I'm hopeful that there won't be still any opportunity for people in the pool area to look over or drop something over towards the street, since it's now over First Street. And you know, that's the same issue with balconies that we're really concerned with. And we're concerned about it because of past experiences, especially at other campuses at ASU and elsewhere, but we want to make sure that didn't happen here. I think that the way you've handled the streetscape is better than before. I like the deeper sidewalk that will be have the capability of students and others to flow through that area. But I think it's going to be pretty active without getting into the street and having a problem there. I think that having some seating there is good. I think that having your retail on that side is a good thing. I think that Tyndall is in this area the area place where a lot of that wants to happen. Have some concerns still about the parking, and I think that in general, the overriding reason why I would be concerned is that we don't want insufficient parking to cause an overflow towards the already full U of A garages, which would then equal overflow into neighborhoods and into just bad situations. And as we discussed, those, you know, our garages in that area are full and getting fuller, and so I think that I would encourage you to continue to look at that. It looks like, you know, what we've experienced on our campus is 1 in 3 freshman students living on campus bring their cars, even though we'd rather they didn't. And even though we have an awful lot of things, we don't have a streetcar yet. I think the streetcar will put a dent in some of that. But we just want you to be aware, as we've discussed with others we've talked with, that it's not our intention that those who would be living in these facilities, privatized facilities next to the campus, would think that they should get a permit in one of our garages as their permanent home parking space. We don't have enough spaces for that. And in fact, I think that your intent is that you want to have enough parking, and I like your thought of having an off-site lot. I'm not sure how these students would get back and forth to their cars if it's at an off-site lot. That would have to be considered. But we are probably going to have to take a position that where folks that live in these facilities right in this area are not going to be given a parking permit until all the others that are in the realm of folks who really need that permit, both commuters and the ones living in U of A facilities on campus, are able to buy one. So there would be a waiting list. Can't say that waiting list will go away or not, but we need for you to be okay with us taking that approach. It's kind of our approach to saying you're confident there won't be an overflow. Well, if you are, then help us in discouraging folks from wanting to do that, and that's the only active approach we can take and still be fair.
Mm-hmm. I think the positive about what you've proposed is that this off-site parking will be at a lower rate than even with lodges that you're not going to let them park it anyway, but that's the advantage to that they only use the car once in a while, they can park it. It's with them there at school, but it's away in their camp, a good deal less for it.
But it's important that we don't have them flowing into neighborhoods, too. You know, that's a serious problem that we try to deal with ourselves, and so we can't be increasing that issue with these projects.
Can I ask a couple questions over here? Could you go back to your slide showing the building itself?
From the corner up.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. You know, we're going into November 14th, and we realized you had to do as much as you could in a short period of time. In past presentations to the committee and on buildings, what other applicants have done is shown perspectives of the building from inside the neighborhood going west. If you started at 4th Avenue and University and moved eastward from there in the residential area of the neighborhood, what are those residents going to see? That's a question I think the committee would like to know, and I think people from the community would like to know. So I think that would be helpful. I think you have a very advantageous perspective that you may not be showing when you're showing this oblique here, that it would be nice to see when you look at it head on, that direction, exactly what are you seeing? Because that could be something that,
right.
You know, it's showing an amenity that you're not really showing.
That's true.
That could be helpful. My question, you know, and I'm not an architect, and I realize you have to work in the world of reality as to how to build these things, but I believe your underlying zoning is R2. In R2, the building height is 25 feet, and your first level is quite high there, and I'm wondering if it can in any way there can be another level that is more replicating an R2 height, so that there's a little bit more of a one-to-one, because you rise up rather dramatically in comparison to that historic building that you're showing there. And most of the historic buildings there are about 16 feet. And so 25 feet is what you would have been allowed in R2 anyway. It's something to consider. I'm not saying you have to do it, but it would soften that even more if there was something, if it's not solid, if it's glass or whatever, that relates to the lower heights on your west side. Have you mentioned at all or talked on, maybe I missed this, a Zipcar program, something like that? Would that be part of your management program?
Yep.
Okay. Your loading. How are you handling loading in this area here?
The loading, this is the loading berth right here, so garbage trucks and whatnot. Well, actually, garbage trucks will not. We were told that the garbage trucks would set up along the alley. The garbage would be brought out through the side here, which is, they love that. Mm-hmm. But this is the loading dock for the retail, so what would occur there is that the goods would be brought through the service quarter, mm-hmm. back through the loading dock. And then residential trash.
We may or may not have a problem there as far as the maneuvering into First Street, pulling out, backing out into First Street.
It's a very wide street. I mean, we'll do truck geometry, but the truck size, you know, this is a panel van. They're not huge trucks. Mm-hmm. So we feel this isn't a semi pulling in here. Mm-hmm. You know, for a retailer like this, these are always smaller. You know.
Can I just make mention of the fact that most of our deliveries come from firms out of Phoenix who think they have to drive a semi? I just got that personal experience that they don't drive little panel trucks unless you know who your retailer is going to be. And I would just tell you that that is not what happens
it's
here.
Easy,
yeah. Yeah, just FYI. Mm-hmm.
On the parking, how many levels is that building?
It's two levels, so they're the entry level, and you circle around, you can take that up, there's a parking level. So that ramp comes up and lands up here, and then you circle around.
It doesn't go, you asked how many levels does it go down?
Right.
It doesn't go down.
It's two levels.
It's surface level, and then
20 feet, 60.
Right, approximately. The second level, the bike parking, Mark mentioned about addressing most of the bike parking and much of it in the units, but we do have 76 bike parking spaces within the building, and then we have bike racks on the sidewalk, several bike racks on the sidewalk also. I believe those will add another 10 or 15 bike parking spaces, I think.
When you come back next time, could I also, I own properties to the south of you, and I would just like to know what they're going to see. And that's that oblique corner.
That's a great comment. And, I agree with you.
You know, it's the perspective. It's just getting all the perspectives.
From, you know, a whole bunch of locations. It seemed like critical, you know, spots to be, you know, the building would be viewed.
Yeah, it's hard seems to render judgment on it.
Right. It seems sort of monolith still. And I don't know that that's fair to your project. And I would really just like to see the perspective.
You know, and I'm not trying to be hard on you. It's just that now we've had some experience with these things, and when we've gotten pushback on it, it's usually been how folks have done their bulk reduction on that first story. And when they've been higher than what the regular zoning is, that's caused a problem. So it's something to consider how you're doing, where you're starting your first level of reduction.
Sure.
You mentioned that the first street there is not a good retail street.
Right.
But then you also said you want to have a lot of pedestrian and walking. And
well, the being that the residential entry is there, there'll be a lot of activity from the students going in and out. We feel that there's going to be more activity along Tyndall, in particular with the projects along here, you know, where the students will be making a lot of way over. But we feel it's really important that this is wider here because of just the traffic that will be generated at that entrance.
The university also likes, you know, gathering spots that are easy for students
right.
to
that's why
mingle. And so they like a little bit of wider sidewalk at entrances.
Right. And it's along here we have these built-in benches that back up to our planter beds so that there's places, you know, people are hanging out, they can sit down. And not that students would sit around and text or anything like that. But,
no.
You know, just in case they have.
I have a few comments. First, I agree with much of what Bob said. I think you've made a lot of progress because what we first saw was a non-starter, as I think I made clear. But I'm still not completely convinced because of the lack of full illustration and many of the comments that have been made. It still looks a bit monolithic. And again, it may be not. We just can't see it. A lot also of your work, and I applaud it, but I'm at the same time a bit skeptical. You're relying on landscape treatment of the building, and the terracing is great and the application of plants, but being a landscape architect in the desert, and you all are from Chicago, it's a completely different place. And the temperatures up on those roofs will get up to 140 degrees. It's very hard to get plants to grow on a rooftop condition in the first place. And when you're dealing with extreme conditions, it's especially difficult. So I'd like to know if you're engaging consultants who are experts on rooftop gardens and have experience in arid climates. Who are you working with?
You know, we are working with a local
landscape architect.
Well, we spent a...
Who is that?
Yvette and Sean.
I'm sorry?
Yvette and Sean.
Not familiar.
We also
I mean, I'd like to hear from them, too, as to what they're going to be doing, because, you know, you can have illustrations that look lush, green, and wonderful, and the end result is you got a couple of planters with a couple of crummy trees that die, and then the whole scheme, like that whole green screen, you come over to our building and see our green screen and all the trouble that we've had. Well, I think you see, it's not as successful as it was originally conceived.
And they water it.
And we water it. So I just want to be really hardcore serious, and I want to see your consultant, I want to hear from them, I want to hear what they're going to do. You know, pretty pictures ain't going to cut it on this one.
Let me interrupt, but we've spent an extensive amount of time in a similar situation in Tempe, similar climate, and we designed a very similar situation, so I just want to make sure you understand it correctly. Where the parapet is, it's a concrete parapet that comes up, and that itself is really a buffer. What we're trying to do is then, on top of that, create this green. So you already have your buffer with the concrete. We're just trying to now appeal to the, from a visual sense.
No, I appreciate that. I'm just trying to encourage you to do good landscape architecture that's feasible, and I want to make sure that's the case. On the streetscape,
First Street or Tenth?
Both. Have you, and my question's for Jane as much as for you all, have you looked at Main Gate Square and how you can, through your design, make some sense of continuity and connection to that streetscape, so that we're getting some language, right, for the whole area?
Their planter elements are somewhat like ours, and they do have a bench system that's similar to what we're proposing. So there are some similarities. It's not exactly the same.
I think it would be desirable not to create a whole separate language. Not that you have to be, you know, hamstrung by that, but I think there'd be some real virtue to that.
It'd be good to know what's across the street, too. I mean, there's a whole plan for the project across the street, the streetscape, the trees. It'd sure be nice if y'all knew what each other were doing and there was some effort to create some sense of continuity, whether it's the same trees or not, you know, to be aware of.
Right, and then we've offered to work with them to carry the trees to Euclid in front of the Udall Drachman buildings as we get closer to that, because we want to make sure that we're walking the walk.
It makes the whole street experience, I agree, it makes the whole experience greater when there's continuity down the streets. It's a definite plus.
On the corner space, I guess I'm not quite understanding, and what I'm concerned about in your illustration makes me concerned, that it doesn't end up being an inactivated leftover space with just some furniture thrown in there.
Well,
can you explain it a little bit more?
We see this as an element that would be part of, you know, let's say that this is a restaurant here, so that's an outdoor seating area. We also see that would be able to extend along here, so that it really is part of the restaurant. And there it's an opportunity that, you know, doors are, you know, and seasonally could be open. But it's really, we see that as an extension of the retail space that's, you know, behind it.
So could you guys maybe come back with some ground level perspectives, sketches of what that, you know, at the ground level, pedestrian level is so critical. You know, is that whole retail strip going to look like? What's that corner going to look like? How's that going to interact? I think that you probably need to do that in order to design it and know yourselves whether it's going to work and how it relates to the sidewalk and the like, and it'd be great for us to see that as well.
I'm also curious, as you were mentioning, the nature of the retail is going to be local companies that are concierge-like to the students. I'm wondering if you could shift your thinking a little bit more broadly, that this is a retail facility for the neighborhood as much as for the students. And I don't know what that means in terms of your marketing it and looking at what the market is for a neighborhood such as we have here. But I really would like for you to broaden your thinking, that this isn't just serving these students. This is part of the larger West University neighborhood and the campus. And what does that mean in terms of a retail mix?
I probably wasn't clear, but we look at it as kind of one and the same. We're looking for, when we brought nationals in, they tend to not be as good as operators as someone that's more local and understands the market.
Well, I think that's great.
Yeah, so that's where we're going with it. And when you have a food and beverage use, that buys into the program that they can feed the tenants above, you know, obviously, if we put in the right product, it'll bring the community in as well. So we agree.
Let's hope so. I'd just like to hear some articulation on that. Overall, I'm not sensing any... let me back up. I think we have a unique situation here between the campus, Main Gate Square, and the creation of a language of environmentally sensitive design. Whether that means LEED certification, whatever other qualifications that means. And I think if you do your research about students today, the number two thing they look for on campuses, and if you don't know this, you should, is yes, safety in parents, but two is some demonstration of sustainability to a campus. And so that language permeating the district around the campus, and just for smart marketing purposes too, can you tell me a little bit more what you're doing in that regard? Because I'm looking at all kinds of facades that don't say anything about being in the desert, with sun and sun control and energy conservation, and what you're doing with rainwater conservation, and how can you do some curb cuts on the street to irrigate your plants. Just tell me what your concept is.
A system that we've used in the past for irrigation is in terms of collecting wastewater and distributing it. You know, all the plants themselves will be in drip irrigation, but we use, and this is a perfect opportunity with the step, especially on that side, to use the barrel approach and to collect any water and then distribute it on. This will be a LEED building. Our building in Tempe that's going up right now is LEED Silver, and we aim to do the same thing here.
It would just been
LEED
good to
silver.
Have heard that.
LEED Silver, not like...
You know, we went into to Tempe aiming for LEED Silver, and if we got certified, we wanted to be LEED. We wanted to show that sustainability that we mentioned. We're still on track for Silver. And
that was your target in here?
Our target's the same here, yeah. We're using very, very similar systems.
It's your target, but not your commitment yet.
I mean, I'd be lying if I told you that we're committed to getting the LEED project. I'd be lying if I could guarantee it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many advantages, not only us, but our students, which benefits us. A huge thing that a lot of people don't look at is the utilities costs. You know, these kids talk. And if you have a building that's just not efficient, it really equals rent. And all of a sudden that name gets up and the rent increases. We're the ones that end up eating it. So it's only, you know, it's not just a marketing thing. It's a sustainability thing from a capture rate perspective for rentals.
So just to make sure I understand, you're committed to LEED certification. Your target is above that to silver. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Last question has to do with, you talked a lot about your resident managers. Can you tell me what kind of training they're going to receive and how to deal with students and some of those issues, and what kind of background checks, and who are these people going to be? What sort of qualifications?
They don't run the building. They help us manage the building.
I understand.
Okay. So, you know, they go through an extensive interview process with our staff, from the manager to the GM. Background checks are typical. It's all in here in terms of the hiring and that management plan. But it's an extensive training program as well. They're doing a lot more of the helping us police the crowd more than anything. They're our voice in the crowd and within the tenants. But yes, they go through a pretty strong training program. We, you know, we'll get a group of them up front, and throughout the course of the year, some people drop off, some people don't. A lot of the students love it because they're collecting a check during the year just for, you know, doing what they would normally do anyways. So, you know, it's worked out. It's been a smashing success for us.
Thank you.
Your bike closet idea is very clever. Were I a student and had a high-dollar bike, I'd like to have it close by rather than down in the garage. Would that free up some of your bike parking down below? So perhaps if you've got a tenant, retail tenant, there's a bike shop, for example, that could use some of that parking, perhaps even to feed a restaurant, because we have bike gatherings all over the place, like Geronimo Court here.
Yeah, I mean, if the city...
What's the access to the bike parking in the garage now?
What do you mean by access?
Do you have to come in through the lobby with your bike, or do you go into the garage?
The elevator in the garage, so they They would take it up to the second floor to the spikes. Okay. Right here.
And what's your experience as far as, you know, kids using, you know, the second floor interior, you know, bike spaces? You're saying that they'd rather bring it into their room. Are you sure that's not just a function of them, you know, not having, you know, like a more clear access to it or something?
No, I mean, in our experience, that room sits pretty much empty. If we didn't need that per code and the city was okay with us doing it within the unit like we are, we wouldn't have a bike room there. Most of the students just bring them up to their rooms. It's such a big thing with vandalism and theft. We even have monitors on them. It just happens. So you just don't see that type of traffic in these rooms. It's just not the reality of it.
You've not done a bike closet before?
We just came up with it for our Oreo project. It'll be this first round. Yeah.
You talked about knowing at all times where your residents are. Do you know where their guests are?
Yeah, that's one of the things with the design of the building. So they have to, you know, they have to enter through the lobby itself, and that's where a leasing center is. We're staffed. It's not laid out properly right now, but there will be a desk and a window that's set up right when you enter, and anyone that's not a resident, you're only allowed one guest per unit.
Okay.
It's all laid out. They have to sign in, they give their ID, it's photocopied. So that's how we monitor that.
I'm going to reiterate, you know, some of the things that have been brought up by, you know, the other members here. You know, as I was watching, I mean, I do certainly appreciate the, you know, the stepping back on, you know, the west face, but it does still lend the entire rest of the building to seem pretty monolithic. And I think maybe part of it's a function of, you know, you're cramming, you know, the, yeah, a lot of stories in here, and it does feel a little bit compressed vertically as well. I'm not sure how you alleviate that, but I think that might lend to some of that. You know, it just doesn't feel like it could, like it's like there's opportunity to be open on some of these other faces. Definitely the west face, you know, it is a concern, especially if you're trying to do LEED certification. Your water use would be, you know, phenomenal trying to maintain, a green west face on a building that's going to be, you know, entirely exposed. There's no like late day shading on this in any terms. So it is going to definitely, it's something that I would like to see how you really are going to address that, because, you know, like Jan was saying, you know, a picture of a green plant, especially a computer model, is not really going to be representative of what we're going to see, and it's just difficult to see that whole end as it is. And then on the ground floor, I'm just wondering about Tyndall Avenue. You know, I can't really see how, I don't see anything about like how we're accessing the retail or anything. I mean, there isn't anything that's telling us, like, what does that street look like? What are we doing there? Is there just a door, or, you know, in front of that little, you know, step back, you know, off of the, you know, that little inlet?
Matt, the entry to the retail is really dependent on what the retail is.
Right.
So it's hard to say. I mean, this could be two retailers, which would probably put a door there and a door there.
Right, but that still comes back to, you know, sort of like an intended plan. I mean, is it just like, you know, is this just one long, you know, glass wall on the bottom, and then, you know, people would walk in and out through there? I mean, you see in Main Gate, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, permeability. It's not just glass. I mean, it's actual, you know, like, you know, ways that people move in and out of, you know, of retail stuff.
Right. I just think in defense of them, they have no idea who's going to be there. And we created our doors based on who we had. And I think that they're not there yet. Right.
The one thing we would do is there would be recesses at the location,
right,
where there's a door, because the door can't swing over the property line anyway. So there would be recesses to allow for that. So there'll be that articulation. But really it is, you know, and we're proud of it, it's a glass wall. There's visibility in, it feels,
you but know, I would tell you 1,200 square foot stores can be as popular as, yeah, you know, 3,000. So depending on what you're doing, you could have seven retailers, which means you have a lot of permeability.
This quite honestly could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you don't know, obviously, who's going in, how big they will be, but to get a sense of the aesthetic nature of what your intention is along that streetscape, I think is still important.
Yeah, we could take a best guess off our experience with what we see.
And we know that the doors might move and that things might change depending on who goes in there, but there's an essence that I'm hopeful that you're trying to achieve on that streetscape that hopefully communicate that those, you know, these sketches could help to communicate to the people that you want to go in there as to what you're trying to achieve.
Sure. I think in what it might help too to kind of clarify that little that corner element as well. From the rendering here,
doesn't really address that either.
Right, and so we don't see that as well. Right now, it does look like it's possibly just a tripping hazard. And I would like to see something that is more inclusive, that really shows that this is integrated to this retail space, not just because there's a door on the angled wall, but something that's integrating that. It looks really small. It looks like we're trying to cram like a bunch of like tiny tables into a small space as it is. I'd really like to see how that might even play into how it wraps around onto the retail face. How does this integrate to this whole retail scene that you're trying to create here, and how is it going to be something that is going to be inviting to people from the street, whether they're students or neighborhood residents or whoever's coming along there, just that whole corridor. I really want to understand how this is envisioned to be inviting, as opposed to a long glass wall that a lot of people are going to walk by. So that's part of my what I'd like to see, and maybe needs a little extra planning to that. What else did I have on here? I definitely had a question still. It was something I brought up in the last meeting. It's been brought up to these committee members and with other people here about. There are impacts to our neighborhood, from having a large number of students that are going to be going through our neighborhood for various purposes. Whether on the streetcar, they may be riding their bike, they might be walking. It's impact. And we really are looking to see how the projects in this area are willing to participate in our neighborhood with projects that aren't their projects specifically, but are part of the neighborhood. They're helping with the neighborhood. We want to come up with other traffic management scenarios. There could be other things in parks that your project could help to make the neighborhood as a whole a little bit better. It's not just, here's this thing, we met the needs for this space, but how is it going to, how is it gonna, ongoing play into, the needs of the neighborhood. There could be some opportunities. The neighborhood's talked about various things, traffic mitigation, sponsoring various things in parks. There's sidewalks that are still missing. So I haven't heard anything about that. That was a request that I had asked at the last meeting, and so I'm just wondering if you guys are thinking along those terms and contributing something to the neighborhood.
It's the first. I obviously missed the last meeting, so it's the first I'm personally hearing about it. But we're by building this project, we're part of the community. So, we're open. I'm not, we can sit down and discuss as a group or team. I know there are a lot of rules restricted with that, but we're open. We're not looking to be one side of team here. We're looking to be a team player.
I kind of want to follow that up with some comments with regards to the relationship to the historicness of your project to the buildings that are here. I think in your presentation, if you focus a little bit more on what the street level is and how that street elevation relates to some of the sizes and the patterns, the rhythms that's established in that neighborhood, I think that would help. And I see at that street level, that's your best opportunity. To bring that sort of vocabulary in. Because if you step back and you start looking at this building, it looks like it could be anywhere. you know, it doesn't look like really a Tucson building. There's no shading of the windows. There's no trying to allow this building to live comfortably in the desert here. So, you know, just give some thought to that.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying.
Verdun's great, but there's some great traditions in architecture here that you could start to articulate and use in a real functional way. There's lessons to be learned right in the neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
One other thought regarding the student behavior and safety of the community around it. I think that, again, just to come back to the balcony question again, because that's the biggest issue that we've had as far as behavior of students that impacts the surrounding community. I think I recall before that you had some intentions of having the balconies kind of recessed into the building rather than projecting out over. If that's still the case, I couldn't tell. That might be a positive thing. I think that it sounds like you have a limitation on where how many balconies you're putting in. I did hear you say that you were putting it only in the bigger units, but I hope that doesn't mean the bigger balconies, because the number of people that can get onto a balcony is related to the amount of trouble they can cause when they get out there.
The typical size of the balconies are 5 feet deep and approximately 14 feet across, and that really corresponds with the living room widths. So they're not huge balconies by any means.
One of the things that could be really effective. I like the trellis idea, I like the shade that it provides. I think that is one of your responses to our climate. Maybe that trellis could also become something that has a screen nature to it, where it's a sort of a catch-all if something gets accidentally bumped off the balcony edge or a ball falls or something. Having that trellis double as something that would protect anyone from something if it should fall from above. It could be a really good idea.
Sure.
Smart. And am I correct in assuming that your recessed balconies are considered bulk reduction?
We understand that they don't satisfy the lower zoning.
They do not.
Because that's 12 feet. The requirement is 12 feet deep. And in width, the width of these is about the width, the 25% that satisfies, that meets that width, but we're not satisfying the depth of that. Again, we understand that. But we do feel that those do, you know, provide, you know, breaks in the facade that, you know, are helpful for the
window. Yeah, from a management perspective, we, you know, ideally we would have the balconies even smaller, where they're, you know, 5 feet is code minimum, but not go the full width. And, you know, we'll probably end up there where they're not 14 feet wide. It's just easier to control. It's better for the community. It's better for everyone. So, you know, if we were to go deeper, it's not something that we would.
Well, the deep when the facade is out here, I don't think creates the essence of the setback for that. Mm-hmm. I think the smaller properties are looking forward to the south and to the west and even perhaps to the east.
Jim, I have a question. What are the restrictions on what negotiations can happen between a developer and a neighborhood, and what the developer is allowed to do as a
citizen?
Accommodation, impact. I don't even know the term.
Do you mean outside?
You mentioned
the
before there's state laws that restrict that kind of activity, and I just wanted to have a better understanding of what that is.
Well, let me just step back and say what we're doing is because this is an Area 1, the decision as to its compliance with the document, the main gate document, is now in your hands. And a majority vote of you can approve that. And your limitations are, you're looking as to whether they comply with this document. But there's also the issue of a bulk reduction plan, which is... Has a finding in it, and maybe I can read that to you, because that gives a little bit of room to move here as to what you can do. Now the issues as to what happens in the West University neighborhood, whatever they think they can live with, that's fine with us. That's really not specific to this.
So there are no state project. Law restrictions?
No, there's nothing that says, okay. There's nothing, you know, like if this came down to, well, we'll only approve this if you do this traffic circle, then that's problematic. But if there is kind of like a you know, we agree we're part of the community, we agree that we have an impact, that our transportation issues will affect you, and we're willing to do that, well, that's, you know.
Okay.
All right. But just let me read something to you here so that we're all kind of on the same page on the bulk reduction.
Page 27.
Okay, my eyes are going and it's not very bright.
It's my favorite part.
D4B.
And what it says, just as on the record, the Design Review Committee may approve a special bulk reduction plan using step backs and other criteria for buildings along the west side of Tyndall Avenue. There will be a finding to assure the historic buildings to the west are considered in the design. Bulk reduction on other sides of the building may be less than is required in section C-17. And the provisions of section 18G, which have to do with historic preservation, should be taken into consideration in the plan. However, the corner of First and Tyndall should be designed using urban design best practices for pedestrian-oriented street corners. And I think they have read that and they have tried to respond to that by this plan. Whether you think they have responded adequately is the key here, and that they're, and that when you're ready to vote, that your vote will, whoever makes the motion to approve it or deny it or whatever, there will be a finding to assure the historic buildings to the west are considered in the design.
Okay.
So Jim,
if this body votes to approve, does that then go to the mayor and council?
No, we're done. We're done. At least the design and the general, you know, like there are going to be issues they're going to meet in their development review that still need to be worked out and have to be in compliance with this document. You can't waive anything as far as if it says you need this many parking spaces, you can say we can have less. You can't do that. But you're assuring that what you're approving is in compliance with this, and staff is making sure that they're in compliance.
So, Jim, then I can be assured, or I'm asking, I guess, that staff has reviewed this and it is within appropriate required height limits and parking requirements and those kinds of issues, you know, that are strict compliance issues.
They will have to be, whatever you approve will have to be meet those. They haven't submitted anything of that detail to us.
So you will tell us that went before we get to the point where we vote.
Well, hopefully when we
It'd
get
be good to,
the
to have staff input to verify.
The plans are coming in tomorrow, so by the 14th we should have a good idea.
Right. And I'm going to probably ask Trish to maybe at least to compile a list of things that we're either in saying yes, they're meeting these, or these are problematic.
That would be great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And we made sure, in coordination with staff, to schedule the next meeting after at least the first round of review comments had been received, so that you would have that information.
Great.
Really quickly, I know we've touched on this, but if there's more feedback. I know some of it was these guys have been working hard because in completely moving the building, they were doing, I think your little mice at your office were doing some of these renderings, and they got emailed this morning to us. So we acknowledged we needed to get some renderings a little bit lower and that kind of stuff. But on the architectural piece, that C-17 that Jim was referring to is the section that talks about the 25% of the facade, 12-foot kind of step backs. And I can't remember if Jeff may have mentioned this, but over on the west side with that bulk reduction, we like blow the tops off of that requirement as far as the 25% and 12 feet in exceeding that. And rightly so, that's what the code says we need to do on the west side. I'm not looking for kudos at all, but that's we exceed that. on the this side, we're, we think we're right at it, but it's we're
close.
It. We're close.
Right. Side you talking about
along First Street because of the setbacks that occur here.
Right.
The south side.
Yes, the south side. And as Jeff mentioned, what we did was we if you remember the context map that we talked about when we talked about Tyndall, Tyndall is actually an area where there's a lot of high-rise stuff going on, and it seemed that the focus needed to be sort of more at the pedestrian level, which is exactly what you are all suggesting we need to provide, because it still looks monolithic, but when you're at the pedestrian level is where people are going to be engaging mostly with this building along Tyndall, because further east, it's going to be blocked by a lot of the other buildings that are going on from certain directions, not from all of them. And we need to do kind of a better job of that. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out, because we're going to debrief and they're going to look at me and go, well, what are we supposed to do on Tyndall? And so I'm, the sense was is that we were trying to meet that section of the code and still providing architectural relief, focusing on the pedestrian area, and Tyndall being sort of the area where we weren't quite meeting the letter. We were hitting the 25%, but we weren't going 12 deep, and we were, yes, using, I think, Jane, you asked, using the balconies as that relief. Is that a trade-off that this committee is interested in discussing? Are we?
I think the problem is that we can't really see the pedestrian level. So we're having a hard time knowing how it looks straight on. Like if I look at the building facing south, even at its best perspective, I don't really know what that looks like. So I don't think that we're saying it's bad. We just
want to see more
from your particular viewpoint, really see it. And so we really have to have that. It'd be nice to have it in advance of the next meeting. And maybe can we send you comments, Jim?
Sure.
And we could send comments out that you would get in before we meet on whatever date that we actually decide on. I know it's on my calendar.
We're in a position to be able to do that, absolutely. And I think that those are great comments. I think that the work that we did to get to here was monumental with a staff that's bigger than a small office.
Yeah, and we thought you did.
So I think that. We're happy and willing to do that.
I would add to what she said. You said that on the south side, you're close right at it. Boy,
the west side.
You said the south side.
The south side facade, when you, depending on what you define as the facade, right, if it's the block and it's calculated that way, then we think we're pretty close
and
to the 12.
And you think you are because of the notches coming from the west.
Yes.
I think that does provide some relief there. It's a little different maybe than the kind of facade reduction that folks had in mind. But even with that, being close is not as good as being able to say we are there, even with that. I mean, if you're close, just please get there so that you can say on the south side, technically, we are complying. So there isn't almost or close or, because then you can turn around and say, well, you haven't complied on three whole sides, So if you can get there, not just close. And if the same's true, I guess you don't have a facade reduction requirement on north, but you still have the same condition. Then you're just talking about Tyndall, then I think that it's a slightly easier conversation. Although I think that it's, you can, from this angle, you can kind of read those slots and that separates and articulate the building some. From the ground level, I'm not sure you will so much. I just think it is important to know what are those glass balconies going to read as, what's it really going to be like? Because I think is what we're all after is the good experience, more than the technical issues. The technical is important, but we want it to be successful from an experiential standpoint. So, Tyndall is definitely the north-south connector that's in the center of the block that's going to be the most urban street on here. That's a connector to Main Gate, to University Boulevard, and it's going to be the most
travel from pedestrian standpoint, and there's going to be obviously some other large buildings with some facades along there. So Tyndall probably wants to be the most urban, you know, face of this building. But still, it does want to be articulated and wants to be something that's successful from an aesthetic and perception standpoint. And like it's been said, it's hard to tell exactly yet.
How high is your first floor, your retail?
14 feet.
And then the pool deck level, in the last iteration of this plan, the deck levels for the pool was at the 130 feet. But now, the deck level for that is at the same height, because it looks like you've added more units onto the east.
The pool is at the same elevation. It's
right. So then now I'm just wondering about the 4 and 5 bedroom stuff on the east. Is that all at 130 feet? Because it looks from your rendering as though that's actually the walking level is at the same as the pool level.
That's correct. They're at the same. They're at the same floor.
It does not exceed the height.
Right.
So the pool level is 130 feet.
Well, that's the top of the floor. That is right. The top of the floor at 130 feet. The floor elevation of that is 120 feet, 4 inches or something.
So the pool's open and is at a level of 120 feet. What's going on over here is base 120 feet and then has the floor, has the space.
I just want to make sure, because just from that rendering, that's part of the reason why I think some of this is confusing, because I'm looking at the rendering. It looks like you have a pool level and then, more story, another story level.
It's not another story, it's just the units. Right.
As the zoning, the zoning's the top of the structure, maximum height is 130 feet, so that's where we're at, and then the pool is open to the air and below that height.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
Jan, you had talked about some, and I'm looking for the two of you to speak architecture speak for a minute, but you had talked about some of the things that are contextual in the neighborhood that are potentially able to be added into the building that can really give some respect to the area. Can you speak architecture speak?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with materials. I think it has to do with shading devices and the sense of a porch-type application.
Like right next door.
Exactly. I think also just, if you could go back to that rendering that was up just a minute ago, and your question about the floor height on the first floor being 14, what do you have on main gate?
What do I have?
Yeah.
Well, I have 18 to 20.
So I'm thinking that looks just really squatty.
It does kind of. That's why I asked the question.
It's not, and I think that lends to the monolithic quality of it. So if you were to really make a prominent piano nobile effect on that first level, that really announces that this is an important streetscape and an important building. And do it through height, but also maybe there's an improvement of the selection of the material on the first, second, maybe the third floor, so that it grounds that building and it breaks that facade up, and it really, because when you're walking along that streetscape, you're going to maybe look up through your screen, and that's where you're going to see those materials. I think it just looks like it's that first floor is non-significant. And thus the streetscape's nonsense.
Right. I think an important point with that is that we previously had approximately 20-foot resident or retail height. And as we started to set back the building to the west, we were losing units left and right and down to the point where the job didn't pencil out. And what we ended up doing is, as I pointed out, we have a single-loaded corridor that wraps around the first floor. So we played around with the heights to maintain a 14-foot retail height, which is a reasonable height, and it will satisfy retailers of this size, absolutely. But really, that effort to be able to try to maintain some bed count, that allows it to work for these guys is really what drove that to take place. So it's kind of a trade of where do you go, where do you take it? And those 22 units we lost there, that's a
That's a lot.
The problem is, we, you know, by doing the step design, and it's just, I think most people understand a square or a rectangular approach from a building design is the cheapest build. When you start stepping, it starts increasing the cost quite a bit. So all of a sudden our costs skyrocketed. We lost square footage on a ton of beds. So we just looked at, okay, how can we get creative here and still get this thing to pencil out? And we spent, you know, a heck of a lot of time just trying to figure out ways to do this. And that was what we figured out to be the best approach at the sacrifice of, you know, we've done a ton of retail at 14 feet.
Is there a way to take the second floor then and make it not look like all the other floors?
That's what I was thinking.
I think that she's really honest.
I think what you're talking about with just taking, I just saw on another building, which I meant to share with you guys and I didn't, that really took kind of what you just articulated, the bottom three or four stories, and did something almost architecturally very different than what was above it. It didn't necessarily physically, in fact, I don't think the building physically stepped back at all, but
like
it gave the visual effect of it actually doing it by just using some different materials.
Yeah. So another thought is that you could raise the trellis a little and give the impression on the streetscape of having a higher ground level bay, and regardless of where the floor is behind the wall, and creates maybe even some added interest with something above and then the glass below when you're walking along that streetscape. You know, something needs to happen, I agree, to distinguish the ground plane levels, the first few levels from the others, because it is a little uncomfortable for that facade, especially on the south side, come crashing down to the sidewalk, you know, without any vertical articulation.
Right now, the design looks like what you're describing, where you're really trying to cram it in. Mm-hmm. That's the feeling that this is providing. It's like, you know, it's still really boxy, and you're trying to just squeeze as much as you can into it, and that is expressing itself in the design. You can see that.
I think that's a great relief in terms of
some visual. It doesn't even have to be a physical step back. Mm-hmm.
And it could be landscape too.
And again, if you just look to the neighborhood, I think you'll find a solution.
Yeah, definitely in terms of like historical context, because that's something we brought up about the last design as well, just making sure that it you know, fits contextually.
We're reaching about the 2-hour mark. I mean, we can keep going.
I'm going.
I'm done.
This last thing that I had were just the things that I felt we needed some clarification.
Sure.
No, I think that was good.
Is there any final comments anybody want to make?
Yeah, I did want to just say one thing, and it's not really a comment. It's more about, like, you know, the process. Because there's definitely a lot of, you know, a lot more feedback you got from us tonight. So I don't know if there. I mean, it might be to your advantage to kind of, you know. You know, maybe do another like informal setting, or you know, the individual, you know, communication or something to you know, before you come and put all your, you know, all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, no, I think it's
a lot of questions about this.
I think we'll come back and we'll refine what we've heard into a plan, and then whether we come down or, you know, we'll figure out a way to get it to you guys
and then get some feedback. Yeah. I think I'll probably send Jim into Hives if I suggest that we try and get this group back together again between now
That's
and
really
November 14th.
Yeah.
Because frankly, we threw out all the dates that would be available during that time, and the soonest we could do it was November 14th. So I think that, and I can work with Jim, you know, we can get everything to all of you through Jim. I can bring it by, and then if you want to funnel feedback through Jim, if you want to on a one-on-one basis call me, that's fine, and we'll figure out how to do it so that we're complying with everything. But I agree. I think that we need to do a little bit of work, and we need to provide you some better renderings from the pedestrian area, and I don't want that to be on the 14th.
Right.
There needs to be something in between.
Are you the best contact point?
I'm the local contact point, so yeah, and I have a card. You had your hand up,
too.
Do
you have a question?
Is there going to be a call to do?
Yeah, there will be. Okay. Once we're officially done talking back and forth. We done?
Yeah.
All done.
I'm good.
Now I have my cards.
Can we call the audience? Anybody want to make a statement?
Well, I like a lot of comments were made about this and how it's stepped back and set back for the west side. I agree with Jan. I think there's going to be a major issue with plants on the west side. I think they're just going to shrivel up and die, and they're going to look at dead plants. But I look at this, and I look at a box, and it's not an inspirational box to me. And I think that people are talking about the context, and I think Jan and Bob had some ideas about screening and stuff, but I find those walls, they repel me. They don't want to bring me in. They're not inviting to me. It's one of the things I liked about the other project on the park, that there were some shifts, and that it was an engagement, and it actually has some breathability. This building doesn't look like it breathes to me. And so that's what kind of attracts me to buildings of this size, is something that is has that. It has elements. And I think you can, this thing's a heat sink the way it is right now. And some of the screening ideas that could be done to help alleviate some of that also might give us some interest. I walk around the main gate a lot, and I liked your comments, Jan, about having some retail that appeals to something other than 18 to 22-year-olds, because we don't have much retail in the main gate area. No offense, Jane, I like the restaurants, but retail is really not a place I want to go shop unless I really want a nice short skirt. So I would, and local is good. In terms of, you know, traffic and parking, this impacts our neighborhood to the west, and we will get cut through traffic. And so I think that's one of the reasons we're asking for some sort of engagement with you in our neighborhood, because you're certainly engaging our neighborhood with this project and using that, and we'll be using some of the neighborhood streets as people find that Speedway or Euclid are not real feasible at times to drive on. I also wonder if you have some sort of lease incentive for students with not very large. I mean, it's like, is there something in a leasing that, hey, don't bring a car, and this is the benefit you get. About that, the windows facing west, are they operable windows? Because again, we have some glare to the bungalows to the west, but also potentially noise creation from that face if indeed they are operable. I was kind of curious about this being described as a multi-family project that solely student housing. Seems kind of, I don't get the multi-family part of it, but maybe it's just that there are males and females that are all the same age. And Bob stole my idea about raising the screen at the street level. That was a good idea.
Sorry.
I must have projected that. I think that's it.
Okay, and for the record, that was Chris Gans from Western University Neighborhood. And you look pretty. Okay. Okay, so I think we're done for tonight. We will reconvene on November 14th. You may speak with the committee if you wish later on.
Thank you.
Okay, end of meeting.
All right, thank you
very much. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you.